everybody. Welcome to Agitated Podcast, episode one. Thank you so much for being here. We're really excited to make this finally happen. My name is Jessica Munger. I'm one of the hosts. I use she, her pronouns, and I live in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Hey, my name is Millie Harmon. I currently live in Northern Arizona. She, they.
I'm Shelley Williams. I live in Sacramento, California. She, her pronouns.
And I'm Caitlin Sibonap, and I also live in Sacramento, and I also use she, her pronouns. And I feel like we should just acknowledge that our voices are pretty similar. And so for those of you who don't know us well yet, and maybe even those of you who do, like my mom, when she heard episode zero, couldn't tell who was who. So if you find yourself in that same position, you know, it is what it is. We've talked about how, you know, we mostly agree on things, and so it doesn't really matter who says what. But, you know, we acknowledge that our voices are very similar, and that'll just be a thing. If you've got suggestions for us going forward, we'll take them, but we're not gonna, like, say our name right before we say any word.
All right. So, what's agitating us this week?
All right, I will start, Millie. Because this shit hit me close to home. And the venom is just, like, pumping through my body.
Let's hear it.
So, I moved back several years ago to the pretty small town in northern Arizona that I was born and raised in. And so, on Holocaust Remembrance Day, at the elementary school that I went to, 7 8th-grade boys had a full-on Nazi parade on the soccer field in front of the full, you know, student body and faculty.
What?
What? You know, whatever the monitors were for the lunch period.
Whoa, Millie, and I saw you posted that, but I didn't realize that was your childhood
school. My school. That was like, that's my slide. Like, get what the, you know? Like, very, very strong feeling. And not only that, this school is located, like, right on the edge of the Yavapai Apache Res. Like, it is basically, you know, right next to their land. So it is, this is not like a white population purely school, you know? This made people feel scared inevitably. And so what were, like, the consequences, y'all? They were suspended for the rest of the week. But that Saturday was a baseball tournament, and two of the boys who took part in this white supremacist parade ended up playing.
Whoa.
Why? Why did this happen? It's, like, so predictable, it's disgusting. The father of one of the boys was the coach and a cop.
Mm-hmm. So their parents obviously assisted them in this, right? Like, little kids can't organize a Nazi parade without adult help. That's just not, like...
I mean, it's on school campus, you know, like, I don't know, like, the theatrics involved, you know, but I do know that they were in eighth grade, and how much independent thought do you really, really have by eighth grade in a small town
when
you're exposed to absolutely nothing?
I mean, even if they weren't getting help organizing it, the fact that they were in the headspace to think that was a good idea came from home to some extent.
Oh, yeah. My God.
And how the school could ignore the welfare and safety of the majority of its student body.
Yeah.
Because what? He's a cop?
Yeah, of course. Well, okay, so I'll do mine. I think we're going to be pretty serious this week. One of the things we were talking about when we were just kind of checking in before we recorded is just, like, this was a rough fucking week. So mine is that, okay, so we all probably have heard about how, you know, the Biden administration isn't really shutting down the detention centers for children. They're just calling them, you know, not camps anymore and giving them, they've recast them with a new name, but it's basically the same deal. And certain people have gone on, you know, about how it's drastically different, but it's really not in terms of the impact on these kids' lives. Okay, but today, or yesterday, I didn't realize this, that the facilities that they are housing these children in are teeming with toxic chemicals. And I just had no idea. Basically, they're like super fun sites. So just to give a little bit.
Can you explain what a super fun site is? Because not everyone knows what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I'm like super agitated. So, well, let me back up to, okay. So Fort Bliss and Joint Base San Antonio are contaminated with toxic chemicals that exceed government safety thresholds. And those are two of the places where they're putting these kids. And then Joint Base San Antonio is still waiting on new arrivals. So there's only about 500 people there. Another thing I saw in this article is that there's 20,000 kids that the Biden administration has in these camps. And the facilities,
which is to clarify, way more than in the Trump administration.
Yeah, thank you,
Millie. Rah, Biden being the humane option.
Right, right, right. Well, and of course, you know, I guess, just to back up a little bit too, I mean, part of what makes me so agitated about this is that this was like the number one thing out there. We have to support Biden because kids in cages. We have to support Biden because kids in cages. So this is what should have been addressed, obviously, first. And then to have people telling us that this is no big deal, these are a different name for cages, is just so, So anyways, but going back, so there's a history of cancer-causing chemical contamination at Fort Bliss, far above official safety thresholds. And also the cleanup was supposedly supposed to happen, but it's totally unverified whether it even has. And then in San Antonio, on the other side of Texas, the water is contaminated with what are known as forever chemicals, PFASs, at levels two times higher than what the EPA deems safe. Thanks to the fact that the military has been using firefighting foam there. And just as a little aside, these chemicals actually exist everywhere, and they, you know, put them in furniture and rugs and all this shit. And this is something that I've been learning a lot more about in my personal life recently after having ovarian cancer 5 years ago and having no idea how the fuck that happened. There's no history of it in my family. And then some of the work that I do with an organization called Beauty Counter that's working on sharing and advocating about toxic chemicals in our personal products. So this is something that I've been paying a lot of attention to for myself. And then just the idea that these children are locked in these facilities that are basically like cancer cesspools. And so the impact on their lives from the trauma, of the experience, that God knows about that. And then on top of that, that who knows what's going to happen in terms of disease, autoimmune disease, hormone disruption, and cancer potentially later on their lives. Just, and the icing on the cake, or the cherry on top, or whatever the fuck you would call it, would be all these people giving us, it's okay, Charlie, giving us the impression that this is good and better. And that when Trump did it, it was all so terrible, even though it's the same fucking facilities and it's the same number of more children. And anyway, I feel like every time my source of agitation will probably at its root be traced to the fucking Democratic Party. And that's me.
Well, I mean, it's like we all forgot, you know, the history that Biden had in the White House, because... Right. It was the Obama administration that started this policy. So why, this isn't surprising. It's just really, really horrifying.
Yeah, no, it's just having people tell us as it's horrifying that it isn't because of the person who's responsible for it.
Yes. Yeah, okay, I won't get into that rant about why people are trusting Biden to end policies that he started. But anyway, my agitation this week is like kind of on a different level, but... It's just, and Shelley, I think you saw this too on Twitter, and there's a discourse, if you will, happening about whether revolutionaries, activists, organizers, leftists need to be nose deep in theory all day long in order to be, you know, qualified to be like a revolutionary. And there was an argument happening about how, you know, leftists, especially Americans, need to read more Marx in theory, and how there's no excuse because peasants used to, you know, be illiterate and they learned languages so that they could stay up till 4 a.m. reading Marx by candlelight, and that we all have an obligation to do that. And I think that is really like a problem. You know what I mean? Like, we all have to be able to have a place in like making change happen. We don't all have to be, you know, academics or experts in, you know, Marxist-Leninist theory in order to be like making the world a better place. And sometimes that's our role, right? To be able to learn things and distill them for people and communicate information to people and meet them where they're at and bring them along. And it's unrealistic and frankly ableist to think that like everybody has to be, you know,
how could we possibly win tanky. If that were the case?
Like, yeah, I mean, it's just absurd. It's absurd. Like, it's absurd. Right. So, I don't know. It's just...
It's very bad strategy.
It's bad strategy.
I agree. It's very helpful. Bad strategy. Smart. I do want to, like, you know, acknowledge the nuggets of truth that are in that, which is that I think sometimes... And I say this as somebody who has a really, really hard time, especially at this point in my life, although I used to read and devour books a lot more. I really struggle with, you know, my attention span, my work and my child, you know, like when I don't have any of these, like, you know, things going on, the last thing I want to do is like try to read really heady material. I do think that when I have committed myself to trying to do that, it has edified me and been helpful. And given me like, you know, starting points for like, you know, discussions that lead into things. So I also would push back against the anti-intellectualism and
So
there is a tension there that is real, that needs to be grappled with, because I think sometimes we're like, oh, people are too dumbed, and that's not true either, like, but there are reasons why it's hard for people to sit down and focus, especially in these current conditions where you're just constantly barraged with input. You're just constantly barraged with sensory and information and all of that, and that's what we're working with.
Yeah, Shelley, I just to clarify, I totally agree. I think a lot more people should read theory, including myself. I think that that is a very important practice, and we all believe strongly in like reading history and helping that inform the work that we do, you know, and that is necessary. I just don't think that it's fair to say that everybody needs to play the exact same role in the movement. Right. That's what made me agitated. Come on.
Well, you know, like, I also think it's sort of ridiculous here because it totally has this, like, capitalist undertone of creating qualification as some sort of, like, elitist thing where people with lived experience are, you know, sort of undermined in what they know because they haven't read all of the, you know, correct things.
Yeah, and one thing that stuck out for me in my kind of evolution to where I am now was, you know, early on when I kind of felt really, you know, I became close with somebody who was a very, very studied Marxist, who, you know, grew up way more privileged than I did and went on the normal college track. And so, like, you know, and still doesn't have any single person with nothing, you know, so he just quiet time all the time to like read and think and all those things that a lot of us don't. But he told me about the concept of the organic intellectual, which is like Gramsci, who interpreted a lot of Marx, and explained that there are people, and this is recognized in like the larger, you know, body of Marxist adjacent theory, that there are people who just already inherently understand a lot of this shit and they don't like need to read it all. It's actually the people who, you know, there are people who probably need to read more than some of the rest of us do. And it's also those same people who are beating us over the head saying we need to read more. It's interesting. It's just like an interesting phenomenon.
So when we're going to start off with this, probably kind of just what's personally agitating us. And the expectation is that it would, you know, run the gamut. Sometimes it might be less serious. This week's was relatively that way, but I hope that we can keep agitation as something that is more expansive than just like this is what's irking us. Like, that's not what we want to talk about. We don't want to give that tone. And also, it might be kind of like depressing at the beginning. Like, there's, you know, agitation probably isn't going to be something that's really awesome. Also, have you met the world today? So you know, that's, but that's part of the whole point of like what we're trying to do here is kind of expand our own agitation, keep ourselves agitated, and then also deconstruct it a little bit of like, you know, what helps get people agitated. And the assumption, right, is that agitation leads to action. Is that, that's what we would hope and want. So we're going to play with it. And your feedback is welcome on all things, including this.
And I mean, part of the reason that we created this space was because we think sometimes it's helpful to break down these big feelings of agitation into, you know, meaningful, actionable system change ideas. And I think that yes, we are, not everything's going to be so deep and dark, but there's also a lot of value at, you know, figuring out where are the bodies we need to direct this agitation at to make change within those different circumstances.
And that's part of the struggle too, right? Because if it were straightforward about how you dismantle the system, then, and what leverage points are the key leverage points, like, this would be a lot, we would be a lot further along, right? That's part, for me, that's part of the agitation always, is it's like, this, here's this thing that I'm absolutely outraged about, and I don't know what to do to make it stop. I mean, do you guys remember, going back to mine, like, when we first heard about the kids in cages under Trump, mm-hmm. and the detention and all that, and we were all in D.C. For a conference that we had put on, and it was this feeling of like, oh my God, you know, we're going to stop this, right? Like, this isn't going to be okay to do this so overtly. And it fucking went nowhere. And here we are with Democrats recasting it as this is fine again.
Not only fine, but have escalated it.
Right. You know, so it's like, and that powerlessness. And yet, so then it's like, you don't want to let those, you know, those, you don't want to think that through. You don't want to let that in. But that's what we're trying to say. Like, we need to figure that out. We need to, and part of acknowledging it is that it doesn't feel straightforward and clear where to go and how to take action that actually makes a difference. And that's fucking agitating.
Yeah. I mean, the show is not called Irritated, right? I think you said that last week, Caitlin. Like, it's so much more deeply shook than irritated. It's like, and hopefully, you know, hopefully we can provide some actionable things and some analysis that's helpful.
So why us? Let's talk a little bit more about how we know each other.
Okay, so we all work together at Move to Amend, but this is not a Move to Amend podcast. And we figured out recently, our relationships go back like seven to 5 years since we've like first met each other, right?
Yeah.
And that is through our work. And we can, I don't know, maybe we should talk a little bit about Move to Amend for a second, say what that is.
Sure. So Move to Amend is an organization and a campaign that is working to pass the 28th Amendment to the Constitution, which says that corporations shouldn't have constitutional rights and that money is not free speech. So if you want to learn more about it, obviously, we would love to have you at movetoamend.org. There's a lot more to say about that. But it's a, you know, it's a large scale revolutionary constitutional change campaign, which is unique.
But also, our everything we say here does not represent the views of Move to Amend whatsoever. Sort of.
And it, but it is also informed. Yeah, no, that's true. Sometimes yes, sometimes not. And we're not going to spend a lot of time worrying about that one way or the other is sort of the point. But I would say that, you know, our analysis of change, our relationship certainly, and where we are right now is a lot shaped by having done that work over the last many years. And, you know, the crux of it is that we are all radicals and we want revolutionary change, and working on a constitutional amendment and dealing with Congress doesn't necessarily, it's like, that's working in the system, and that's what we have been doing. And we have some agitation about that.
We do.
No, and I think that what makes, I mean, what we've gained from Move to Amend is so much of our, you know, grassroots building fundamentals, but also with the challenges of actually working with Congress within the system. And so I think that we really do want to get a little bit more critical on processes and things that we think are, you know, sort of ridiculous within actually making change within the status quo. than we would otherwise be able to within our, you know, little roles within Move to a Mat.
And just like all things, we're like in process on this right now. Like, we still are working with Move to a Mat, and we are agitated about things from that. We also have learned a lot from that. And, you know, so we have it all figured out. We're just trying to figure it out as we go and articulate some of it along the way and hope that it, you know, hope and try to make that helpful. I think a lot of what we've talked about doing on this show as it relates to kind of everything is self-reflection and using this as a space for self-reflection in a way that we intend to try and make, you know, somewhat more universal than just our own processing. Like, we're not going to be boring you with just our own internal stuff, but at the same time have talked about how, you know, as on our path towards ever more radicalization and digging underneath the surface and figuring out what the fuck is going on here and what we should do about it to try and change our world, you know, there's a lot of like, you should have that figured out by now and posturing that happens that we want to try and avoid and critique and be an alternative to of figuring it out loud instead of like, oh yeah, we got that. And being afraid to talk about something until it's all figured out.
Yeah, that's really well said. Yeah, we're going to commit to like being humble and learning publicly, which is a very fucking scary thing to commit to. But, you know, like we were saying earlier, right? Like, we all come, we weren't all born, you know, with like Marxist literature in our hands. So we all have had like a different kind of journeys this direction. And so we're seeing that we have a lot of friends and people out there who are maybe feeling a little like unsure about where to go. Like, they don't have a political home. Like, they don't really like feel represented by what's happening, and they're pissed off about, you know, the last many years of Trump, and they're not seeing things get much better with Biden, and maybe, like, you know, so we want to be there and be like, yeah, that's a legitimate place to be, that's a feeling that we, you know, we get, and we want to kind of take that further, give it some context, and
we know some really awesome smart people that we hope to bring into this conversation too, and hope that we find others along the way. So we will have guests on this show, but not every time.
And we also, I think, really upfront want to acknowledge our limitations within our own identities. You know, we are four white women who obviously have limitations in our perspective and privilege. And as we said, we will be getting guests on, people active within movement spaces, people on the front lines who can expand, you know, sort of our voices and our offering to you.
Yeah, for sure.
And we also, go ahead.
Well, Shani. I was just going to say, we also, I mean, Millie, earlier you brought up a story and you didn't kind of mention your own personal connection with it. I think there are things that we all have experienced that, you know, do make us qualified in some ways to talk about certain things. But like, you're a Jewish person living in a small town in Arizona, and there was a Nazi parade in your community. And that's, you know, might have been why it was even more agitating. So I think we can name those things as well. But
Certainly. But with everything going on in the world and the uprisings in, you know, some of the major cities across the U.S., like, my fear actually rose in my belly for the black and the brown kids there.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I've only met two other Jews while I lived here. So, like, it's not, you know, I think that we can also have a lot of rage and you know, need to communicate agitation over issues that are outside of our own identities, for sure.
Well, and I think that that's one of the, when we were talking about this, it's like, can you have a podcast with four white women that's not like, that's like relevant enough? But at the same time, it's like, we are trying to like push through that. Like, this is a very segregated country, and there are lots of white people out there who don't even know any people of color, you know? And so it's like, should they not talk about race and racism? No, that's not right. You know, does that mean that it's probably problematic shit along the way to figure out how to behave in this, you know, completely racist world and step outside of it. Like, hell yeah, there will be lots of mistakes, and we all know about that. We've all had them. It's inevitable if you're trying to unlearn shit that you're inculcated with every day, whether it's racism or, you know, capitalism or patriarchy, all the stuff. So, you know, not that we intend to put our feet in our mouth, but we want to own it when we do.
We will.
We want to. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. We will commit to that ourselves. And then also we're very open to if we miss something. That was where I was headed. Yeah. That. But yes.
No, and to acknowledge really up front that, like, society makes you racist as white people. That is what is ingrained from day one. And so working against that is a fight, and it takes very, very strong active effort to move away from and educate our, you know, our circles, you know, to something else.
I was going to say, I think one of the things from our experience, you know, working at Move to Amend, we are four white women, and we've also had the privilege of, you know, organizing in a group where we, you know, right now not so much, but in other times we're the minority, and, you know, have definitely, you know, been through a lot of uncomfortable moments, and being around people who were generous enough with us to, you know, help us work through it and think through it. Not everybody has that.
So just being transparent about it. It's like, we can't do anything about the fact that we are white people, but we can take responsibility for what that means in the world and, you know, when we talk about it and the implications. So,
yeah, totally. And that brings us to the question of, like, accountability. You know, we can't be a group of four white women talking in a public way and not be accountable to anybody, you know, and so we're accountable to each other. We have a relationship where I think for a lot of years we've been able to sort of hold each other accountable, but we also have this larger circle of our comrades and intergenerational, you know, multiracial group of people who we consider, like, to be our, you know, our people. And we have intentional relationships around dynamics around, like, race and gender and all of those things. And we try to be as intentional as we can and be accountable to ourselves and each other and the larger group.
I want to underline the importance of having relationships that are able to sort of call you out and help you move along without, you know, making you feel so broken that you never want to, like, get near the issue again. You know, and I sort of encourage us all to, you know, begin to form those relationships and get a little bold in the way we respond to the people around us, you know, when it is, you know, very blatantly hurtful.
All right. So we also wanted to talk about why we are choosing to do this right now and also kind of acknowledge that there's a lot of podcasts in the world. And does the world really need another podcast? But we've been talking about doing this for a long time. And I think what made us finally, like, get to it, for me, I'll speak for me. You guys can say if this sounds right to you or something else too. But coming out of the pandemic, in the pandemic, whatever the fuck is happening, the pandemic is upon us. And earlier on in it, earlier on, it felt more like, okay, you know, maybe everything's going to shift around in some way. And all of a sudden, all the stuff that didn't really seem like there was anything possible in terms of giant change, it was like all of a sudden the world was changed around. And to me, even though there's been, you know, I won't go into how there's a million hard things about it, but and that is not positive that there was a pandemic. But on the other hand, remember that feeling of sort of like, oh my God, you know, in a matter of like 24 hours, the world is like a totally different place. And we've been in the business, you know, bad metaphor there, but of like, what if the world was totally different? And then all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, we saw a glimpse of like, the world could be totally different. And we don't know what's gonna happen next. And that was, you know, that was really agitating. I felt very shook by that. And I think that made us kind of get off our asses and say like, okay, yeah. You know, we've been doing this for a while. We've been talking about it more publicly for a while. Like, maybe we should get on with it. do it.
Well, and it also feels like a lot of the lessons that, you know, we were, that we thought everyone would learn as we're learning them, you know, the pandemic happens. Well, clearly, we need single payer, right? That seemed really obvious to us, and then somehow that all got convoluted and not made into, you know, a thing that was, like, pretty irrelevant to the situation when it was extremely relevant. And then there was the largest uprising in American history on the heels of that. That was, like, really, really powerful for a while. And then the specter of a Democratic administration did what we all knew it was going to do and just kind of quieted it. We're watching this ramp up again, and I think we all have some hope that, you know, it might, you know, become a powerful force again in 2021, and the conditions seem to be right for that. But I think, you know, we all had a lot of moments of hope that there was going to be this, like, mass awakening, and then it got swept under
the
rug.
And then our demands got downgraded by Dems.
Exactly.
Sorry, I just feel like, for the sake of people who are just meeting us, I just want to, maybe we should just name something that's happening, which is maybe an elephant in the room, which is that we are not Democrats, but we're radicals, and we've used that word before. And what we mean when we say that is that we get at the root of problems. We're anti-capitalists, we're anti-fascists, and, like, nice to meet you. Probably you are too in your values. Maybe you just don't identify that way. I don't know. I don't really know what to say at this point if you don't, like, consider yourself anti-capitalist. Like, I don't totally understand, but that's okay. You can still be here. And I think, I don't know. We'll try to be, explain terms and stuff.
Well, and
I think
also, can we go back on to the Dems part?
I just wanted to stop us there.
Yeah. And, like, we are not and haven't been for some time, you know, each of us different amounts of time on that one. And that's one of the things that we'll probably go back and talk about more over time. But we are friends with many people who are Democrats. We are friends with many people who even sometimes have been in the leadership in their local community, in that party, and work with those folks and, you know, are in struggle with lots of people. This is a big question for the left, is, like, can we take over that party, or can we build another party? And there are, like, strong arguments for both options not being particularly viable, right? And, you know, we've come down on one. We also have had at different times a willingness to shift strategies. I think our big thing is, like, it's a fucking strategy, you know? Like, no political party should be your identity, and it's a strategy towards other agendas. And the other agendas are more justice in the world and more democracy and meeting people's needs and not destroying the planet, which is, like Jessica said, like, I bet everybody listening shares those principles and values, right? So then the question is, what is the means to that end? And, you know, that's not going to be all that we talk about in this show. That's the other thing, is, like, I don't think any of us think that, like, political parties one way or the other are really about, but it's an important piece because it's how you interface and potentially take, you know, legitimate power within the state. And so, you know, we do have to, we're going to have to come back to this. You know, personally, there are reasons why we feel the way that we do about the Democratic Party, and it is based in real experience. And we look forward to having the opportunity to share that with you along the way. And then sometimes when we're particularly agitated, we might shortcut and, you know, use swear words because it's deserved.
I want to talk about our vision. What do we vision?
That is way too hard a question.
Should we do a visioning exercise?
But really, okay, we are, but, like, we make fun of that, but we're also visionaries, so,
like, you can vision and not, like, have the secret, like, tattoo in your inner arm, you know?
Oh my god, remind me someday to tell you about the raw vegan that I dated named Ender, who made me watch The Secret before he would kiss me. I don't want to talk about
it. My mother made me watch it 3 times because she said I wasn't paying attention the first 2 times.
What are you guys even talking about?
Oh my god, you innocent.
Oh my god, this is a whole episode.
Okay. Well, somehow or other, I have avoided this.
Well, okay, so, like, envisioning. Like, we need to envision a better world. We need to envision better, more supportive, inclusive communities. We need to envision, like, a lot of shit to make things better for the majority of the people living on this globe. But there's a lot of work behind that envisioning. So you don't just sit back and imagine something better is going to happen. We must be, like, very, very proactive.
Fuck yeah, Lily. Well said.
Episode one, come back.
All right. So we are going to be doing a regular, semi-regular segment based on the Reddit subthread, Am I the Asshole? These are basically people who do something and then start to hear that this may be controversial in some way and they're not sure if they're the asshole and they put it out to Reddit to get a consensus on whether or not they are the asshole in a situation. Okay, so the title is Am I the Asshole for Not Thinking to Cover My Dress Form Before Hopping Onto an Emergency Zoom Call?
Okay.
Okay. So I work from home right now, and we usually have meetings set out pretty far in advance. After I logged out for the day, I started working on a sewing project and had my dress form out and was pinning a skirt to get everything right. There wasn't anything but the bra and stuffing on top. I got a text saying that I needed to hop back on for a quick meeting because something went wrong, so I left my sewing stuff out and hopped onto my laptop. I didn't think anything of it until, like, 5 minutes into the meeting, one of the guys was like, what is that in your background? I looked, and I was like, oh, haha, sorry about that. I was working on a skirt before you guys texted me. The guy looked kind of pissed and immediately was like, you couldn't have taken a minute to make sure there wasn't anything inappropriate in the background?
Wait. So the bra?
Mm-hmm.
I'm confused why the dress form has a bra a little bit, but maybe this is just part of the dress that's coming later or something. I'm having trouble picturing this, but
okay,
also
so
the
maybe,
guy is wrong.
Maybe she's
so it must be a dress.
Yeah, she okay. might be doing the skirt part of the dress. I do some things in this realm, okay. but I don't make dresses, so I can't say one way or the other whether that's uh-huh. how, you know, the process. But so then I apologized and turned off my camera. He wouldn't let it go and mentioned the camera's on policy, kept going on about it until I interrupted him and was like, okay, listen, I get it. It won't happen again. I didn't even realize you could see it in the background. Sorry, everyone. Other people laughed. But he kept pushing, saying, you really think it's okay? Really?
What?
I was fine.
What?
So he's like upset at having, at seeing clothes that cover
a bra.
Boobs.
Right. Right.
That's not even on a human body.
Item. This is not like
what
some
the,
like,
yeah.
piece of lingerie.
Excuse
either.
Me.
Yeah. This is very, yeah, very Puritan. And like I said, I didn't think this would be controversial, but I do think it's just like, you know, we could all find ourselves in some iteration of this situation, right? So anyway, I was finally pissed off enough that he wouldn't let it go. So I said, have we not all seen your kids running around topless in their diapers and not said a single thing about it or what? He snapped, that's not the same, and you know it. Shit got awkward, so someone else said we should just continue. The meeting ended after like 5 more minutes, and I went back to working on my project. The next day, I got a pissy email from the guy with my supervisor, CC'd, saying that we need to rethink the WFH, working from home, policy if we can't all commit to being professional during meetings, and let's all try to
Whoa.
Be a little more understanding of those who are working at home with families. I'm still
oh,
pissed about this.
He sounds like he's out of his mind.
I'm sorry.
I know.
What?
He's creepy.
Yeah, the fact that he's so, I don't want to use the word triggered, but like responding is just not, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, like,
he
what did it give
bra,
him? Like,
not even on a human body.
Yeah,
probably, and
he probably got a stiffy.
Okay.
And, like, you know, because...
is upset
yeah,
at her.
Exactly.
We are not responsible for your erections over clothes.
Like, no. Maybe that's the name of this episode. Yeah.
Maybe he's had, like, an unfulfilled need to make his own freaking dresses, you know? Like, what the hell? You're all up in her business. That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it makes no sense why that's triggering.
Okay, let me just finish. There's like two short paragraphs, including an edit, and then we can go really into it. So she says, I'm still pissed about this. I apologized. I said it was a mistake. Turned off my camera. And for fuck's sake, I even joined the meeting in the first place after logging off for the day.
Right.
Was I really so wrong? And then the edit is, and this feels like way too generous. I think the reason he found it offensive was that I have a bra showing, maybe not the dress form itself. I'm assuming because he didn't say anything to that, but I have to imagine he's not completely insane.
No, he's...
I'm sorry she got shamed into feeling that way, but that is incorrect.
Yeah, and she should not have apologized all the time she apologized. Like, he right. is wrong. Am I the asshole? No. He's the asshole.
And I have, like, mixed feelings, too. I thought that, like, her kind of... But I know, like, when you're in the moment, you just say stuff. But, like, you see your kids running around in their diapers or whatever. I was like, that's kind of an inappropriate retort, probably. Also,
I appreciate that she pushed back.
Yeah, totally.
In the moment, you know.
But if he's going to say a bra is inappropriate, then your toddler's nipples are inappropriate, exactly. And so is a banana. Like, you know what I mean? Where's the line of appropriate here? Like, I just don't see it.
But the next day, he sends her an email, so that means, like, the next day, like,
right. he, like, still obsessing.
He woke up thinking about this because he fell asleep thinking about it.
No, right, yeah, okay. So, yeah, okay, well, now we saw what Am I the Asshole is, for those of you who have never, I'm, that's all kind of new to me, so I sort of love this, and maybe next time we can do one that is a little bit more controversial for us. Thank you, Shelley, for finding it. I think we're done with this episode, right? So thanks for tuning in to episode one, and we have a couple other thank yous. Thank you to Jason and Radical Guide for helping us get this started and helping be a platform for this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Please share our podcast with your friends and on social media. You can subscribe wherever, on whatever platform that you listen to podcasts. Sign up for our email list at agitatedpodcast.com so that you can know when a new episode comes out. And don't forget to look us up on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Agitated Podcast. And next, let's see what it will be, like, probably around May 15th-ish, every 2 weeks or so, we're going to be dropping our next episode, and we'll have our first guest, and it's Eleanor Goldfield, and we're super Woo! Excited that she'll be our first guest.
So, that's a wrap.
See you soon!
Bye!
Yeah, see you soon! Thank you!